At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Let's get into it. Hello, confidant, my beautiful, smart, self-care, introspective, always believing in therapy, confidant. Welcome to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. And this is one I am so excited about. This is a subject I personally don't have a lot of experience or knowledge about, except for like scrolling through TikTok for many, many hours a night. Even in my book about mental health, I decided not to touch too much onto it because it's such an unknown topic, which is why I'm so excited to bring our expert guest in today. She holds an MFT in clinical psychology from Pepperdine University. Katie Morton is super well known for, you guys know her all over the internet with over a million subscribers, over 80 million views. Toot toot that horn, bitch, in mental health. We love to see it. You've been all over Good Day LA. You've been in Glamour UK. You won a Shorty Award. You were a Streamies nominee last year. And your first book, Are You Okay? A Guide to Caring for Your Mental Health, was amazing. I loved it. And now she's here because, y'all, confidants, she is about to release her second book, Traumatized: Identify, Understand, and Cope with PTSD and Emotional Stress, which you can pre-order now, but it will be coming out in just a couple weeks. And if you're watching this on youtube.com/KelseyDara, you just got to see our lovely guest Katie Morton hold up her book. Hi, Katie. Thanks so much for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me. Yay.
You got to hold up that book cover again because, baby,
I know, she's so pretty.
Tell me why you chose that book cover for a book called Traumatized.
I've always loved like oranges, reds, like bright colors. That's just my aesthetic. I don't know why. Maybe because they're like, I don't know, it's a very emotional color to
triggering,
me. It's like very powerful, right?
Passionate.
And so when it came to trauma, I definitely think of it as, and I know that people are like, well, this doesn't sound very hopeful, but it gets better. But I think of it as like an explosion in our life. And we don't often know just how much it's going to affect us. And I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like it's an explosion.
It's hopeful a little bit. Like the center's kind of dark, but around it are these beautiful bright colors, and it makes me feel safe, even though the subject matter might be scary to some people. So I'm so excited to be here. I've been watching your content for so long. I mean, a lot of people might know you from the Shane Dawson series. I saw you way earlier in like the YouTube space. You kind of are the YouTuber like mental health staple expert to so many of us. And so to take on this subject like trauma, I feel like is very now. I feel like people are finally becoming aware of trauma the same way we're finally recognizing all these other, you know, beautiful mental health, I don't want to say disorders, however you want to call it. And it seems so now. Does that resonate with you?
100%. I don't really 100% know why, but I think COVID was a shared trauma. And I know that a lot of people might think, oh, you're being dramatic, but it was scary. We didn't know, like, the main basis for trauma. A lot of people are like, well, how do I know if I've been traumatized? Which there's a whole chapter on it in this book, because I feel like it's really important for people to know. It's just chapter two, so we get right into it.
Yeah.
But the real way that we define it, or the way that we categorize trauma, is, did you fear for your life or the life of someone else? And I think we could say that COVID was scary to all of us. And I still, I'm sure everybody thinks this way, but like, I still think back to like the day before lockdown in LA. And my husband and I were like, I guess we should fill up the car with gas. And like, what do you like?
Go get some snacks or something. I don't know.
Right? We didn't even know what to do. And I had to finish filming this like YouTube original sleeping with friends that I was part of. And I was like, do I go? Am I going to get sick? Yeah. Like, I don't know. It was so weird. And to think that we're over a year and a half out of it and it's still affecting us is just fucking wild. And I would never have thought.
And we're to see where, how it's going to affect us for so many years after. I mean, you're going to be employed for a long time, girl, is all I can say. But did you start writing the book prior to COVID?
Yes. And we actually, so people who don't know the book process, like when it's a nonfiction book, you like sell the idea and then they're like, now you have to create this thing that you said you wanted to create. Mm-hmm. And so I had already sold it in October of 2019 to my same editor as Are You Okay? Because Dan is amazing. We love him.
Hi, Dan.
But, I know. Hi, Dan. But then we had to rework it completely. So when I had put it together, it was supposed to be 10 chapters and it was, you know, it was very thorough, but now it's 15.
Wow.
And we had to include like the first chapter in the book is just all about shared trauma and the trauma of social media and how connected we are. And, you know, including things about the BLM movement and also some Antifa riots people saw and just things that were scary that have happened to us in the last year and a half.
Yeah. And I love that. Like I said, I love that it's so now and it's so current because it takes a while to, I feel like, to come out of something traumatizing and accept that there was some fucked up shit that happened. And that process does take a while because we're so invalidated by society, people in our lives, toxic people. Like, I'm imagining how much you did have to add with what was going on in the world. Were you just like, were you traumatized trying to keep up with making sure trauma was represented wholly?
Kind of. I mean, I had a tough time even now, like I'm still struggling. I think a lot of us are. And it's almost ironic, like, you know, God's a funny man or whoever you believe in. They're funny, right? The universe is funny. Because when I was writing my first book, Are You Okay? I was totally burnt out. I definitely wasn't okay. I was like overwhelmed with work and everything. And then with traumatized because of COVID and just, I don't know, the grief of 2020/2021 is just somewhat overwhelming. Yeah. And I think it's a weird time. Like I've said this in many times on my channel and on other people's, you know, channels and stuff is like, it's the one time as a therapist that I was going through the same thing as my patients and viewers, which has never happened in my life.
Wow.
As clinicians, like as mental health professionals, I was talking with a lot of my colleagues about it too. And we were all just really overwhelmed. And I've never felt that way before. And, you know, we're people too, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely when I was working on traumatized, it's like I had to check myself too. And, you know, how much do I want to share about my personal experience? I always share a lot just to be relatable for people and also let them know I'm human too.
Right.
But my audience was so forthcoming with their own stories to really bring some things home. You know, what's dissociation? Why does that happen? You know, flashbacks, how do those feel? All of that, I think, you know, is really intertwined into the entire book just so that if you maybe aren't sure or maybe wondering how to help somebody you love who's going through it, like it's all in there.
Damn. Yeah. I too released a book during the pandemic that I sold prior to the pandemic and had no clue that in a serendipitous way, I use that word lightly to say like, oh, lucky me. But I was like, oh my God, the world needs this book. And I feel like the exact same thing is happening with you where it's like now we're in that space where we're still not over it, but the shell shock is okay. Like we're like, okay, this is our new normal. And during the pandemic, I read Maybe You Should Talk to Someone by Lori Gottlieb, who talks a lot about needing therapists for therapists and that therapists are humans too, that should be seen as equals. But I think during this time, people were like, we don't want an equal. We don't want like a relatable therapist who's like, yeah, sure. We want someone to tell us what the fuck to do. And when that control gets thrown wayside, like when we don't know who to go to, I think that that's also a piece of the trauma I noticed developing amongst myself and friends as we were like, there's no point in watching the news. It's the same thing said over and over again, a different way. No one in government seems to be fucking agreeing with each other. Like,
no.
I mean, like, how do you think that this is going to affect people as we realize this is our new normal?
I mean, I think that we haven't even seen the ripple effects fully. I mean, I know statistically speaking that like relapse rates were up for drug and alcohol abuse. People who had been in recovery really had a tough time, and understandably so, right? Yeah. We're trying to cope with this thing that we've never dealt with, and we don't really know what to do, and we feel mm-hmm. overwhelmed. And like you said, the news is chaos, and they're running like a ticker of how many people have gotten sick. I'm like, this isn't helpful.
Helping, yeah.
You're making things worse. Mm-hmm. And not to mention just nobody agreeing with anybody and feeling so divided as a nation, you know, those of us in the States, but I know the world feels that as well.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I really think, I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, but there's been a lot more aggression online, in person, people just super irritated and angry. And I think that's one of the first signs of what we're going to deal with. Because really, if we all agree, oh, we've been through a shared trauma, some of the symptoms of PTSD are things like irritability, hypervigilance, where you're like, ooh, is somebody going to jump out of the bushes and get me? I don't know. I'm really scared. This seems overwhelming. Or like always assessing your environment for like a threat.
Right, which can keeping on edge.
Be like anxiety, which you talk about a lot.
Mm-hmm, sure do.
It feels so bad. Yeah, but it's so, you know, it keeps us alive.
Right,
so,
right.
But I think we'll see some of those symptoms. And then like lashing out at our loved ones. That's one of the things I know a lot of people who are in relationships with people with PTSD will say, like, well, they just fly off the handle so quickly. And then even dissociation, which I don't think people talk about enough, like, oh, I don't remember how I got home, and it's not because it was late, and it's not because I was tired in any way. It's just, I just zoned out. Or like, wait, where'd 3 hours go?
Yep.
Don't know. Or days or weeks.
I talk so much about disassociation and depersonalization in my book, because that was my scariest symptom when I first started experiencing panic attacks, that like, I the anecdote or the metaphor I use in my book is the Truman Show, that like I just felt like nothing was real. I wasn't real. Things weren't real. And then I'd have these gaps of time where I don't remember how things went. And it took a long time for me to recognize that it was my brain and body trying to protect me rather than turn against me. And part of my healing process was like, oh, when this happens, I should be like, hey, body, like, hey, girl, like, I see what you're doing. I see you, but it's not useful right now and I don't need it. But like, thank you. And like, we'll pack that up for another time. But I want to go back to the word trauma specifically, because I think it's worth breaking down, right? Like in society, we believe that trauma is PTSD, that you have to be a soldier, that you have to have gone to war, that you have to have flashbacks, stuff that are like are, and I'm making air quotes, like crazy grandpa, like you don't want to scare him the wrong way. Like there's such a stereotype to what trauma is, that what I'm seeing being broken down a lot on TikTok is like, oh no, no, no. Like there are so many other versions of trauma that we don't give credit to, that we don't give like PTSD to. And like, even myself, I went through a home invasion robbery in June, and I still am going through the process of like, something fucked up happened to me. I was violated. And that explains a lot of my stress right now, and going, this is not who I am normally. This is something that happened to me. So can you break down a little bit about like what trauma can actually be, and recognizing that and giving validity to that?
Yeah, definitely. And what a great question and what a great topic, because like you said, so often we associate it with things like I was in a huge accident, plane crash, car crash, something, you know, crazy like that. Or I went to war and I'm a veteran. Initially, PTSD, for those of you who don't know, and I talk about it briefly in the book, is like it comes from the word shell shock, which is when they'd return from war, they like weren't the same and people didn't understand. And so that's kind of, even though it's very limiting now, at the time it was the birth of PTSD and understanding and research. So thank God for our veterans and thank God for people doing the research. We've learned a lot. But now we realize that it's not just what you call like a big T trauma. Like I went to war.
Big T,
I was in an accident. There's also little T traumas. And one of my really good friends and colleagues, she's a trauma specialist, Dr. Alex Altman. She wrote a blurb for the book about these, and she describes it like waves. So you could be standing on the shore and a huge tsunami could come and knock you out and pull you away. Okay, that'd be a big T trauma. Okay, that does happen and it does cause PTSD. However, you can also have these waves that kind of hit you at the waist. And it's like, my parents got divorced. I get hit by this wave. And then I'm trying to find my footing. If you've ever been on the beach, you know, your feet kind of like sink in the sand, but it can like push you and you try to catch your footing. And let's say another wave hits. Oh, I got bullied at school. Somebody was mean to me. Ooh, okay. Then let's say we're trying to catch our footing. I got broken up with. Mm. A friend left me, or I got into an argument, mm-hmm. or I had a close call with something. Mm-hmm. Insert, mm-hmm. you know, I've had a lot of patients and viewers tell me like close calls with pregnancy, mm. close call with a car accident, close mm. call with, you know, maybe job loss. There's a lot mm. of things that can happen to us, yeah. or we had to move a lot as a kid or even yeah. as an adult. Mm. I just moved to Texas and it's fucking stressful. Wow. Would not recommend it. But, you know, there's a lot of those things that then when you think of it in the wave analogy, if it keeps hitting us, we can't keep, like, I can't get my footing. I can't right. feel okay. And I'm going to be washed out all the same as I would if it was just one big wave that came and took mm. me. And the effects wow. are just the same. And so I think yeah. instead of thinking of traumas in these big wave only, mm-hmm. think of them as like how much, because your ability to get your footing is what's called resilience.
Ooh.
So it's like your bounce back factor. Like how much shit can I take and still be okay? And everybody's right. is different. There's a lot of judgment around like, you know, well, how come so-and-so, especially if you have a sibling, you're like, hey, we grew up in the same environment and I'm like totally fucked up and my brother seems fine. Like what happened?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people are just more resourceful by nature. Some people mm-hmm. will have friends or teachers or other people that they grow up assisting them. So they build this network. Maybe they're more social.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of different reasons we can be more resilient. So there's no judgment there, but some people are able to withstand a few more waves than some of us.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I love the analogy of like big T, little T, big wave, little wave, because I'm such a visual person. And like to literally attach like an incident in my life to that and see like how much that one knocked me off my feet versus this one, right? Like the robbery, when it happened, I felt like it just tapped my toes and I was like, I'm going to stomp on this. I'm going to fucking take care of it. And I'm going to move in less than 2 weeks. I'm going to get a new place. I'm going to pack up all my shit, blah, 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 deal with that and not be sleeping at the same time. And then I got to the new place and I was like, oh, this was a much larger T than I was like allowing myself to experience. And I'm doing everything I can that is accessible and affordable to like keep myself healthy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge thing. I'm sure you get asked a bajillion times about like the cost of feeling okay and like the cost of what getting through trauma might be, but like, are there tangible things I'm hoping also in the book that give trauma less of a scary, like mountain of money to look at to get through. Like we're not all just like lost causes.
Definitely not lost causes. And yeah. it is unfortunate. I mean, it's part of the reason why my channel started was I never have felt like mental health information should be something behind a paywall. Mm, like it's something we all have. So you should be able to access it and at least understand.
Yes,
cause sometimes we don't know what we don't know. Right. Like so many people don't even know what questions to ask. Cause you're like, well, shit, I don't even understand. Right. Yeah. Or like if you're having panic attacks and dissociating, a lot of times you're like, I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
I don't have a word for this. Going crazy. That's what yeah. I call this. Mm-hmm. And so having some language to put to it can ensure that when we do reach out for help, at least we're able to ask for the right help. Right. And that's a ton of stuff in the book as mm-hmm. well as takeaways and homework assignments and things you can do at your own pace. Again, no pressure to go fast, no pressure to go chapter to chapter. You can jump around, you know, it's mm-hmm. it definitely builds. But let's say you're like, I don't really care so much about what PTSD is. I want to know what the hell to do now that I feel
right.
that way, you know.
Right. Sure.
So you can jump in towards the end of the book where it's more about treatment options. Yes. But there are luckily some silver lining to COVID is that the price and access of therapy has it's yes. come down and there's so many people available.
Yes.
So resources like Talkspace, BetterHelp, yep. or other online therapy options, yep. amazing. Cannot recommend them enough. I know some yep. people are like, oh, I didn't find the right therapist. They'll switch you right it. Over. I don't
Girl,
like them. Boom.
Yes. Nothing we got personal. BetterHelp on this podcast. And literally I'm like, it's like Bumble. You don't like it. You just swipe next.
Yeah. Next. And as a therapist, even in my office, I don't take that personally.
No, you
need to feel connected. It's for about you. It's not about me. No, you know, like when I find a therapist, need to be older than me. And I like a hippy dippy old lady with long hair. I don't know why. I just prefer
I got a type.
It.
Yeah. I found type. My new one is a witchy, younger, like a little older than me, but like witchy. And I'm like, yes.
You probably need a little pushback, a little
yes.
tough love.
Little feminist, like, oh no. Like mm-hmm. she checks me and I love that. Like
Yeah,
she,
you need yeah. that, right? You need mm-hmm. to be challenged.
Yeah.
And so I think looking into those resources, there's also a great resource called Hope for Recovery. It's the number 4 online. some of it is religious content. People are going to go there and be like, what the fuck? And, but some of it is. And for those who are religious, that's fine. But yeah. there's also groups just trauma-based or eating disorder-based. They offer free groups to people.
Wow.
And a lot of therapists, myself including, you know, we've like volunteered or offered our time to help out. And I think it's just a really great, so there's tons of resources, what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And I think there's also groups on Facebook for peer support. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of ways we can access things. But also know that when you go to see a professional such as myself, we always work on a sliding scale. And that's the terminology you should use is when you go in, just say like, hey, do you work on a sliding scale?
Yes.
And then come knowing what you can afford and be honest too, because I can't tell you how many patients I've had who like, and this isn't judgment, it's just honest conversation. Sure. They'll be like, sit down with like a Burberry purse and a Bentley keychain and try to complain to me about my costs. And therapists have to make a living.
Right.
But we don't get into what we do to become millionaires because that's never going to happen.
No.
So we always, I mean, I've seen many patients for like $20 an hour for free for a while they're getting a new job, a half cost, you know.
Wow.
So therapists do leave room in their schedule and there's nothing wrong with asking them, but just be honest with yourself too, because even for me, like my therapist in LA before we moved was $175 a week, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And my copay with my insurance thing was like $70 something.
Manageable.
And I could afford that. Like, okay, I just won't go out to eat one time extra. Like you can budget it.
Yes.
You know, you just have to prioritize it, which I know sucks, but we prioritize other things. Like I'm still, you know, you pay your bills and stuff. And so you
got a roof on your head.
Mm-hmm. And I get my hair cut. You know, there's things that you do. Mm-hmm. So just consider that and know that there are free resources. There are cheaper resources. And then also just budgeting it out so that you can do it long term. Because a lot of people will say, well, I can afford a few sessions. No,
no.
I mean, it's not a lifelong commitment necessarily.
For me, it is.
Well, I mean, I've been in and out of therapy since I was 15. So
amazing.
And I'm 37. So it's,
and you're it's kind of my thing.
It's kind of a thing. And I enjoy it. And I think it's very beneficial. So just knowing, I think at least as much as you can, committing 6 months, maybe a year to this budget. So that you can give it a real go.
Sweet confidant, before I go any further, you know, I have a lot of stuff going on in my life right now. I mean, we are dealing with a robbery that just happened. We are moving on a very stressful timeline. I'm 2 years sober. My birthday is coming up. I'm turning 31. Oh my God, I'm 21. Wishful thinking. Anyways, guys, life could be just like falling and crumbling apart, but it's not. You want to know why? Because I am using BetterHelp, baby. That's right. I am going to therapy every week. And best of all, you can be joining me, honey. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. It is available for clients worldwide, and they have licensed professionals who deal with issues like depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, happy pride, grief, and self-esteem. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. Anything you share is confidential, avi, VIP, super low down, no one's gonna know, and it's convenient, professional, and most importantly, affordable, because y'all know I believe that therapy should be a right, not a privilege. So I want you to start living your happier life today. As a listener, you're going to get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/CI. Join over 1 million people, including me, taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/CI. By the way, did you know that so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states? Ha!
Is there treatment specialized for trauma that maybe doesn't apply to your, I don't want to say like regular old run of the mill anxiety, depression, panic, which like I joke because those are my big three. like I'm very much right now looking into like the ketamine therapies and I'm doing a journey right now on TikTok while they keep banning me and taking the videos down. Currently getting off all my mental health medication and nerve medication to microdose and try and find something better for chronic pain than what I've been currently going through. And super, super interested in the ketamine therapies. And I don't go as far, like I need my
my like extreme treatments to be still contained. Like, I don't want to go to ayahuasca in the middle of the forest and like shit my brains out and like relive all my trauma. I would much rather be like in a nice chair in like West
in
Hollywood.
An office in a safe location.
Yes. Like, are there treatments that you can talk about that are specialized for more like intense trauma related PTSD or stress?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different things they're currently doing research on. One is psilocybin, which for people who don't know, that's like the, it's what makes what makes magic mushrooms so magical.
Yeah.
But just like we've learned about, you know, marijuana as it's become legal and you can find things with different levels of THC, CBD, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to get into all the CBNs. God. There's so much to it and I don't fully understand it.
Sure.
But just like that, in California specifically, I think it's California and Colorado, they're doing studies. Even my good friend, Dr. Alexa Altman, who's a trauma specialist, is part of one of those studies for psilocybin and its uses in trauma, because they find if they can give you just the right amount, there's something about the, for lack of a better term, the trip that you go on that helps you see things more clearly and heal. And so they find that it, so far, they find that it is another option for those of us who maybe cannot stop dissociating enough to process. Because if you are dissociated, trauma treatment doesn't work because your brain isn't, it doesn't have a chance to process. It's like, I'm out of here. Wow.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward with each new idea, innovation, and partnership. We're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
So psilocybin, even marijuana, a lot of people use that to kind of keep us present, keep us calm, right? Our system can be overloaded. And then there's also ketamine treatment has been super beneficial for many of my patients over the years. For those of you who don't know, it's been legalized and used as treatment for a long time. For my extremely suicidal patients. And usually you have to go in for an infusion. It's very time consuming. And that's been the
expensive.
It's super expensive. Yeah. And that's been what's kind of held some of my patients back from taking the leap, is that you have to go in so many times a week and it's 30 minutes or an hour each time. But now I forget who it is. I think it's Janssen came out with like a nasal spray ketamine treatment for depression slash.
That's big time.
Yeah. So
it's FDA approved.
FDA approved. I think came out 2 or 3 years ago, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now ketamine is created, right? It's not a natural substance like weed or psilocybin, I think is like the other caveat to people being like, well, it's still chemically.
It is. Yes. Because it was a tranquilizer is how it came to be.
Horse
for those
tranquilizer.
Of you But just like anything, it's like Viagra was created as a heart medication. And then they're like, wow, guys got boners.
Look at like we don't need to judge the history of how it got here. The point is it's helping a ton of people.
Exactly. But then there's other treatments too. Real quick. There's two more
please.
That I want people to know about. One is vagus nerve stimulation. That if you guys don't know, your vagus nerve runs essentially all over your body, but it runs up and down the sides of your neck. And there are things you could do. I even have a video about like how to stimulate it on your own, but there are implants you can get kind of around your collarbone that automatically continues to stimulate your vagus nerve. I had a patient in the hospital who was suicidal for years and years. We could not find resolution. She'd done everything from, you know, ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, if you guys don't know what that is. I don't really recommend that as much as kind of more emergency treatment. Right. But everything and nothing would work. And this vagus nerve stimulation, otherwise called VNS treatment, was super helpful. So it's something to potentially look into. And then another one is the stellate ganglion block.
I've had one of those.
You did? You had the injection? How did it work?
I had. I did it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But when you said that, I can't believe someone else knows the fucking term. Whenever I have to explain what it is, people are like, you're speaking gibberish to me. But I did it for pain. So I did three where I went under, like where I was in a hospital, they went under and they did it, which one of them, the third one made it worse, the pain worse. And the doctor was like, at this point, we won't keep going because we know it's not going to work. Like it would either work on the second or third try. And then the second time I did it, I was awake and they went up through my fucking nose.
Oh, you're kidding.
Get it into the back of, like, I can't even show you where they went because it's in the middle of my head, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I grabbed the doctor's hand and I like yanked his hand out of my like face because He didn't like
tell you what he was going to do.
Like he said, we're going to go up in there and then we're going to spray this injection on the nerve and that should help. The pain was like, it felt like an ice pick in my brain. And I was like, absolutely not. So I never,
that's crazy.
I know. So I never got the full effect of that second one, but I did do three of the going under one. But how the fuck does it relate to trauma? What the fuck?
I know. So it's been around since the 20s for pain and other nerve issues, right? Which usually includes pain, but for some people also like swallowing and things, the muscles. So the stellate ganglion is a nerve. And again, I'm not a neurologist. So this is like basic understanding from a therapist to talk to a patient about it so they can go be assessed.
Yeah.
So there is a nerve that runs down around your neck and kind of into your chest a little bit. And they find that those who have been traumatized, especially repeatedly, which we would call complex PTSD or CPTSD, mm-hmm. have like a whole tree. Like this nerve has just grown roots and it is like spreading through your body. And they find that the more roots this has, the worse the symptoms are. Mm-hmm. And when you do stellate ganglion block, it essentially cuts off those roots and they die. And wouldn't you know, some of my viewers have had it done and hypervigilance down, feeling completely impulsive and overwhelmed by emotion, those symptoms go down. So a lot of the PTSD symptoms can be resolved. Now, again, I always recommend these treatments with therapy, you know,
of course,
because it gives you the best outcome.
Yeah.
But if we know a lot of those symptoms are coming from our nervous system specifically, which I know is, you know, as a therapist, I know like fight, flight, freeze is what can kind of fuck us up for a long, you know, it's helpful, but also hurtful.
Right.
If we can shrink that nerve, it's usually one or two treatments, but sometimes three, again, see a neurologist, get assessed, they find resolution and they don't fully understand why, just like anything nerve related, but they just assume that the growth of those nerves is actually what ends up giving us those horrific symptoms.
Shit. Because like my very weird rare nerve injury is impossible to like physically see. They can only go based on like the symptoms, the numbness in my face, the nerve injury, like the actual jaw surgeries that I've had. And like I'm always asking myself, I'm like, where the fuck is Elon Musk? Like, why can't he invent something that regrows nerves in like a healthy way? But I didn't realize like regenerating nerves could contain, like creating more synapses essentially would create more symptoms, which totally fucking makes sense.
Yeah, so, but you just don't think about it that way. Do you know what I mean? We never talk about nerves as they like grow all wild and crazy.
Right, or like how they pertain to mental health. When I think of nerve, I think of pain. So I'm never thinking of it as like the vagus nerve being something that is continually stimulating that fight or flight response or like the being calm response. I want to ask you about hips and trauma, because if there's one thing I've seen on TikTok, it is that women especially carry all their fucking trauma in their hips, and that doing like psoas releasing exercises can like make people like lose their shit and like in a good way release trauma. But like, can you talk about all of that, because it sounds probably very confusing to anyone who's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I'm a huge yoga fan, and they're always like, they talk about how you hold your anger and your pain in your hips, and like stretching them out is really important. And if you think about it just from a like a logical perspective, if we were going to protect ourselves, what would we do? We'd curl into a ball. You'd pull your legs up into yourself, right? You'd use those muscles to
fetal position.
Yeah exactly. And there's a ton of research. If people want to really get nerdy with it, you can go learn about Dr. Peter Levine and somatic experiencing. Somatic experience is essentially like healing through movement. And talking about the nervous system, when we are pushed into our stress response, so something happens and we feel extremely overwhelmed and we go into fight flight. And everybody's heard of fight or flight. Yeah. It's when our amygdala sounds the alarm in our brain and it shuts off our prefrontal cortex. Now, our prefrontal cortex is like kind of the adult or responsible organized part of us. It's like responsible for us to like thinking out 5 steps in advance and like what do we want to do. That's offline. So we're just in impulse mode. We're just making decisions, doing things quickly. Now when we're stuck in that for a long period of time, we get symptoms of PTSD, right? And Peter Levine was out at a safari on vacation in Africa, and he was like, so these gazelles get chased by predators all day long.
Yeah, they fast. Yet
they don't show any signs of PTSD. They don't like try to fight with each other. They're not hypervigilant. They just like, oh, we heard something. We run. They're very graceful. And they just flight so easily, right? They run away. And he noticed that when they got to safety in like a little cove, they do these full body shakes. And we've all seen animals do it.
Really?
And that shake, he believes, completes the stress response. Meaning when we get it pushed into fight or flight, and we can actually take movement to get rid of that, we release that energy. Right. But as humans, when we don't feel that we can fight or run away, we freeze. And it's in the freeze state that he believed trauma was born. And so he did a bunch of research. He came back to the States and he was like, oh my God, I have to try this out. And so he had a bunch of people do these body shapes and movements to help them release that stress and that fight flight energy, and PTSD symptoms went down. And so I don't specialize in somatic experiencing. It goes way deeper than that.
But I've seen it help fucking people big
time. Yeah. And I think that is why the hips and moving in certain ways and stretching out certain parts of our body. I've been telling people during COVID, and I've been doing it personally, is just take a body shake in the middle of the day, like for 20 seconds. You just really shake out like a dog out of the bath, you know, from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And yes, it's okay to get out of breath. I do too. It's very, it's a lot of movement, but it really feels good. And if I, because I'm more of the anxious type too, if I go try to lay down to go to bed and my brain's like, what about this? Do you think about this? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, you're so stupid. Why'd you do that? I get up, I shake out, and I feel better. And it sounds weird and it looks weird, but it works.
But it's also like, where do you think that term, like, it's, I'm so bottled up, or like, I'm keeping all my emotions bottled up. It's like, you got to be like a soda and fizz, shake, get that shit out. Like,
It's so pressured.
Yeah. There's so many mental illness or like, you know, mental management that applies to that. Like, I'm even thinking just even like about depression is like, you don't want to move. Like, your body's physically telling you the opposite, which like makes a lot of fucking sense. Or like with psychosis, it feels like there's like a cap that's like burst off the top and there's all this like blah, 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 energy. Blah, blah, blah. Like, it makes so much sense that, I mean, it always fucking goes back to this, that like the mind and body have to be treated as one thing. And like, hello, that's all I fucking do. I'm sure you two are also like just preaching about treating the body as a whole. We can't just focus on like this one specific thing. And I think with like trauma specifically, people might be anti-treatment because they're like, I'm not trying to relive this experience, or like, I finally got over that thing, or like, like for me, it was the surgery that gave me my chronic pain. And in my head, I think I've let it go. Like, I feel like I've been like, I'm never going to get the apology from the doctor, so I must forgive and move on. And like, but truly in my fucking bones, baby, in my bones, there's still so much anger and frustration. And like, I think with thinking about trauma at big T or little T, we don't even want to fucking go there.
Well, it feels overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
It's scary. Especially, that's the interesting thing about anger specifically, because as a person who's, I don't like anger either.
Yeah. Anti-confrontation over here.
Don't like confrontation. Makes me super stressed out. I get really anxious. Yeah, exactly. And then even if I do get angry, I cry. And then I'm like, God damn it.
Why am I crying?
I'm actually really mad. Yeah. So, but we do, as people in general, we need to figure out healthy ways to express anger and know that anger is just as good and just as healthy and happy for us as like excitement or joy. And not to mention, I do want to throw this out there, if anybody else out there has struggled with the positive, what we'd call, I don't like to call them positive or negative, but I'm using air quotes for those listening.
Sure.
The positive emotions like happiness, joy, those can feel just as scary. I'm not here to tell you that they can't, but a lot of my, especially my trauma patients will tell me that they are waiting for the next shoe to drop, right? So if I feel good, how long? When am I going to feel terrible? Because I'd assume that will happen. Yeah, and it feels just as uneasy. Mm-hmm. But we need to find healthy ways to express anger, healthy ways to talk about anger. I mean, honestly, I used to write like nasty letters that I never give and just tear them up. And I can't type them. It doesn't work as well. I have to write them out physically.
Handwrite it, yep.
Yep. And then, you know, even just screaming some angry music in your car, any way that you can get it out, because anger is usually a secondary emotion hiding something else, right? Meaning it's hiding our usually it's hurt or pain, yeah, right? It's because it's, mm-hmm, I call it puffer fishing, right? Anger's puffer fishing. I'm, yeah, like, I protect. Yeah.
It sticks your
spines up. Yeah. Yeah. You get away. I'm very angry, but really inside we're just like sad. And yeah, it's overwhelming.
Just these little like baby blobs in there just want to be held and like mothered, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
All soft and squishy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think finding a healthy way to express anger would benefit us all, myself, yeah, included.
Yeah. And I think there's like, I mean, you talk about the waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like it reminded me that there are some people I've run into in my life, especially like when you talk about Facebook groups and stuff. I'm a part of a lot of these like chronic pain management or like, you know, my diagnosis specific management. And there are some people in there who have made, and this always sounds like shit to say, like there's no nice way to say this without sounding like I'm judging someone. And maybe judgment is like something I see in that person that I hate about myself, blah, blah, blah. I fucking know. But I feel like I see some people who make their trauma their entire fucking identity. Mm. And I think there's a difference between advocacy and allyship and like education and having that amazing like platform to do stuff like that we do. And like, you know, there's like a, I don't even know what the word is, but I see some people where I'm like, do you want to get better? Like, do you want to heal? And that's a shitty thing to fucking say, because here I am still in pain and like still not forgiving, you know, the doctor that, sure. But like, I feel like I've been able to find other things in my life that represent who I am. Do you ever notice that like once something traumatizing has happened to someone, it becomes their entire life and identity, and how we can maybe show more compassion to those people? This is a personal question. Clearly I'm struggling with showing compassion to these kinds of people.
No, but I think it's very, it differs from person to person. So there's people like you who are like, yeah, I'm still in it, but like it doesn't define who I am. It's a part of who I am.
Right.
And I think for some people, especially long-term trauma patients, people who maybe don't know a life without trauma, like from childhood to now, they've had all these repeated traumas. It can be really difficult for us at that point to think of ourselves in any other way other than as like a victim or as someone going through trauma. And I always encourage my viewers and my patients alike is to not take a diagnosis as who you are. It's just part of who you are. Like you, it's just like a job or, you know, a hobby. We all have these different parts to ourselves and what makes us who we are. And I don't think that we have to pretend it didn't exist. That's not healthy either. But in the same way, pretending it doesn't exist isn't healthy. Focusing 100% of our energy on it isn't healthy either.
Right.
And so I think, honestly, it's difficult because I understand where you're coming from. Like, how do you offer compassion? I think it's more about listening to them and then encouraging them to take some action that's positive. And if they aren't open to it, then know that that is just a, what I would call a black hole, meaning like an emotional vampire. That's someone who maybe, because I mean, I struggle with this in my online community all the time. We'll have people that just aren't ready yet, you know, and I'm like, hey, come back around when you're ready, or you can listen from the sidelines. But if you're asking for help and then people offer it and you're not willing to accept it, that's like an effort and futility for those of, it's an energy suck.
Right.
And so I mean, I guess it'd be, my best advice is to either just be more particular about who you talk to.
Yeah.
You know, and then, because there's nothing wrong with that. We all get to decide who we want to are in our sphere.
Yeah.
And then second is like, you can offer support if they want it. And if they don't, just know that you don't have to engage because they're not ready yet. They're just, they just need some time. They're just, you know, kind of wallflowers watching from the peripheral because they can't, they can't separate it yet. Yeah. It is, that's why, I mean, I specialize in eating disorders and self-injury work. And I'm always encouraging people to like talk about their eating disorder. It's not them. It's this nasty negative voice, or it's, you know, it's this shit talking part of ourselves that just puts us down. Like seeing it as separate, I think, is the most helpful and for us to be able to work through it and move past.
Yeah. Wow. God, you have me. I'm like, I feel like I'm watching someone else's podcast. I'm like just listening to you. Like normally I'm so focused on like, okay, where am I going to turn this question into but I'm just like, my mouth is a little bit open and I just feel like I'm learning so much. I'm like, oh my God, what is the book going to be like? I mean, like, holy shit. I know we're running out of time, but I want to ask one question. Maybe it's not the best one to land on, but whatever. This podcast isn't perfect. How much, like how many excuses do we allow people with trauma to give us, and I don't mean excuses because they're not excuses, but like, how long do we allow either toxic behavior or like hurting themselves or hurting the relationship? Like, how much do we allow? How much room do we allow? How much of that third nasty piece of like the relationship do we allow in people's lives who have experienced trauma before we get to go like, you know what? Yeah, I need to protect myself. Like, is there a level that we should feel? Or
I mean, it's, I wish there's like a number I could put on it and be like, they get
3 times. Yeah, I know.
And then you're like, no. Yeah. It's more like if they're working at it and they're communicating with you, then that's their effort and you need to see that effort. And I know people out there are like, well, I can't even talk about it. Bring them into therapy, write them a letter. There are more ways to communicate than just through talking in a conversation. You know, if you can't get yourself up to do that, let's enlist some of these other supports. Right. So if we find that they're doing their best and they're trying to get better, that is key. That's the first component. Then the second is you as a person get to decide who you allow in your life and for how long.
Right.
And that doesn't make you a bad person. That doesn't make the person with the trauma a bad person. That I talked about this in Are You Okay? Where it's like, it could just be a bad recipe, right? It just doesn't work. I'm not at a place in my life where I can handle all of this, and you're not at a place in your life where you can move past it. So it's, you know, we're at this point. And I think sometimes taking breaks from relationships or distancing ourselves is the healthiest thing we can do for both parties. And there's nothing wrong with it on either side. As long as we try to communicate, I'm always encouraging people, over communicate. So if you have a friend who's really suffering and you feel like they're a black hole, right? You're giving all the advice. You've read all the books. You're doing your best. You're into groups and Reddit threads. And then you come to them and you're like, I heard about this. And they just like put everything down. Don't try it. Then you need to say to them, hey, I'm trying my best to be supportive. How can I do that? Because what I'm doing doesn't seem to be working. And I don't know how much longer I can do that. I know it's heavy. I know it's hard.
But it's true.
And the non-confrontational people that we are, ghosting isn't the best.
But it ends up causing us more anxiety. We'd rather do that than just ask someone what we can do to help.
But I'm here to tell you that the stress of having that conversation will maybe last a couple of days, but the anxiety of just ghosting will go on for months and months.
So I always say that the anticipation is worse than the actual thing, I promise you.
And then it's done. Then you've done it versus the build of ghosting where you're like, they texted. Why stress yourself out more? Talk to people.
Speak your truth.
Let them know I'm trying my best, and always ask people how you best can help. We make a lot of assumptions out through our own lens. Let them tell you. And then if you're able to give that, give that. If you're not, let them know. You know,
that's so important.
And then just holding that boundary. And this is the hardest thing my audience tells me. And I know personally it's the hardest. But once you've told them, hey, you know, I can't be a dumping ground for this anymore. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm working on myself. I love you, but I can't, kind of, you know. Then when they come to you and try to do it again, because they'll probably forget because they're human too. Then we have to say, hey, remember, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to hang up. I love you, but I can't be this person for you anymore. And I know that that's hard. And I know other people who are hurting, it's going to be hurtful. But if someone can't do it, they can't do it. And we have to protect ourselves and others, because what this ends up leading up to is either like the ghosting or maybe an outburst where we say things we don't mean and we get angry. And we just, if we'd communicate more with each other, we'd have a lot less pain and hurt and toxic relationships.
And I think too, like, maybe this is a better wrap up than like, people suck out there, but there's like, you know, I think a lot of people will, my mind immediately went to like serial killers. I'm like, oh, serial killers like went through so much, like they were traumatized, like hurt people hurt people. Right. Or like, you know, I'm thinking of some friends' parents who went through like really traumatic childhoods, and that's why they're shitty parents. And like my friends have to be the ones to break the cycle or whatever. And I feel like the overarching message, even if like this book wouldn't exactly particularly apply to your personal situation, is like educating yourself on it. Cause to even be able to recognize it and call it out and like be able to have that conversation with someone about trauma, even if they're like, I'm fine, I don't have trauma, what are you talking about? Like my mother beating the shit out of me as a child wasn't like, it didn't affect me, I became stronger from it. Like that generation is like what I'm thinking of. Even just taking that step to like show you care enough to educate yourself, to me would like allow me to sleep better at night, you know, to be able to be like, I did everything I could, or like, I'm doing everything I could, and knowing that like people change and they have to change.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in general, we all suffer from the human condition. The more we can learn about it and learn about ourselves, the better, right? Because it can make us not only more compassionate to other people in relationships with, but also to ourselves, which I think ends up oozing out into our relationships, right? How we talk to ourselves slowly erodes and can be good or bad and, you know, cause all sorts of other issues.
Yeah, that was the quickest 50 minute podcast I've ever done. Like I said, I literally was just watching like, can you please tell us and the confidants where we can get your book?
Yes.
All you.
It's called Traumatized by Katie Morton, and you can find it anywhere books are sold. There's links in all of my social descriptions too, if you just want to click over,
and
you know,
below here.
And it's all just Katie Morton. You can find me. And it also, the audiobook will be available in Kindle and all those kinds of versions.
Ooh, I'm such an audiobook whore right now, because like I'm finding my ADHD impossible to just sit still. And so I find that even if I'm just like literally walking back and forth in my living room, I can at least be like learning while I'm doing so.
Yeah.
So
great multitasking.
Yeah. Especially if you're someone like me, that's like, I don't know if I can like sit down for an hour, put those fucking headphones in, baby, listen. And you're, I'm sure I've never done an audiobook because mine was a workbook, so I couldn't do And now you would write a space here for, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm obsessed with listening to you. I could probably finish that book in a day. That's gonna be, I'm very excited. And it comes out September 7th?
Yep.
Boop, boop. I love that. All right. Katie Morton, thank you so much for being on this podcast and talking about such a fantastic subject so eloquently. It's always fun to talk about mental health with other people who are like just as obsessed as I am with talking about mental health. So I so appreciate you. Don't forget, you can follow Katie in all the links below. Definitely check out her book. Don't forget to rate this podcast 5 stars. If it's not 5 stars, please don't rate it. I'm very sensitive. And we will see you next time.